Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm glad you have joined us. A lot to talk about today because we're going to talk about Maryland's environment, and there are quite a few pressing issues. Maryland's Secretary of the Environment, Ben Grumbles, is our guest for the hour. We want to ask him about the incinerator proposed to be built in Curtis Bay in South Baltimore and about the state's plans to address climate change, lead in children's blood, and a surge in redeveloping waterfront land in Baltimore, which raised the question, how can these projects benefit Maryland's waterways? You are very welcome to put your questions to Secretary Grumbles. Our toll-free number, if you're not close to Baltimore, is 1-866-661-9309. 1-866-661-9309. Our email address is midday@wypr.org, and our local number is 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780. Ben Grumbles is starting his second year as Maryland's Secretary of the Environment. He joined the Hogan administration from his job as President of the United States Water Alliance. Before that, he was the top water quality official in the George W. Bush administration, Assistant Administrator for Water at the EPA, after a time as Director of the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality. Ben Grumbles, welcome to Midday.
Thank you so much.
I want to start with a movement I'm told you're excited about, nutrient trading. About a month ago, Rona Cobell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal told us this about nutrient trading.
Nutrient trading is kind of a complicated thing where when large wastewater plants, power plants, what we call point sources, can't meet the requirements, they seek to trade to buy credits on a market and offset that. And so, say a wastewater plant would maybe trade with another wastewater plant, or more likely with a farm. So they can't meet their requirement. So instead of spending millions of dollars to upgrade something in their wastewater plant, they spend a couple million dollars and they plant buffers on an Eastern Shore farm. The problem with this system is that someone loses and someone wins. And what a lot of the environmental advocates are worried about is that the people who lose will be the poor people, the people who live in the city, the people who live near the plant that can't meet its requirements. There is a plan for nutrient trading, but there haven't been any trades. It is going on in Virginia. Pennsylvania also has a plan, but the EPA has pretty much quashed it right now. So Pennsylvania isn't trading. Virginia's trading. Governor Hogan's very excited about nutrient trading. It's sort of a libertarian, Republican kind of thing that we let the markets fix it all. So he's excited. MDE Secretary Ben Grumbles is very excited about
trading. Maryland Department of Environment.
Yes. And I think that they're also eager to show that Maryland can do it correctly, because there isn't any state that is doing trades between point sources like wastewater plants and power plants and non-point, which is farms. So people are very interested to see if this is A, possible, and if B, Maryland's program could be a model.
That was Rona Cobell of the Chesapeake Bay Journal. So Secretary Cobell, Secretary Grumbles.
Freudian slip there.
Secretary Grumbles, what would you add to Rona Cobell's description of how nutrient trading would work?
A couple points. First of all, I absolutely disagree about the false choice between winners and losers. The reason that trading is so widely supported by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Agriculture, and by a dozen or more states across the country, is it's not simply a way to find more cost-effective compliance strategies. It is a way to fundamentally accelerate watershed restoration. And I also would disagree with the line that it's some type of quasi-libertarian approach. No, we're making it very clear, our department and the Department of Agriculture, that you have a responsibility under the law to prevent pollution. And that's regulated, and there are permits and requirements for that. The idea that gets a lot of people excited about changing the status quo and accelerating restoration, particularly involving land use and diffuse sources of pollution, is through market incentives. You can bring a whole lot more players to the table. You fundamentally increase the size of the team that's involved in trading. We have our work cut out for us. because we're absolutely committed to demonstrating, like other states. And I would also say there are other states that are moving forward with important trading mechanisms and trades around the country. But we're excited about making sure that transparency and accountability are fundamental core beliefs in this. So the honest truth is that it's a small minority of some very important but some very cautious voices saying, we don't know if this is going to work. That's why we are absolutely embracing collaborative approaches through an advisory group. We really want to build upon the regulations that Department of Agriculture has issued and test run some of these pilots and fundamentally ensure that local water quality will not be harmed, that standards will be met, and that with more team players involved in market-based approaches involving trading of nutrients, not toxics, nitrogen and phosphorus and sediment, we can make a real difference. And other states in the Chesapeake Bay are very interested in it too. And Virginia in particular is demonstrating leadership on increased trades, opportunities with agriculture and wastewater treatment plant and stormwater utilities. That's a big part of the equation for us.
Okay, but still, I need you to start to back up for me because
sure.
I'm part of why I pulled a clip from Rona Cobellas.
Yeah.
I can't picture what the trading is, what the basic trading
sure,
act.
Sure.
So you've told me a lot about it, but yep. I still have an empty core.
Well,
my understanding.
You've heard of trading to reduce acid rain under the Clean Air Act, cap and trade
yeah.
Mechanisms. The approach with water quality improvement with trading is that one entity that's regulated under the law is looking to not only meet their permit requirements, but to reduce by upstream collaboration and partnership. They can ultultimately reduce the need for
upstream
treatment.
Upstream collaboration
right.
and partnership.
So a wastewater treatment plant, for instance, is looking at a $15 million price tag to upgrade their sewage treatment plant. And it's probably because of the nitrogen and phosphorus, the aggressive regulations that we have that are driving them to make that investment. If they can ensure that they will meet that requirement by putting some of that money into purchasing of agricultural credits, best management practices in the same watershed. It's a proven fact that fences to keep cattle out of the stream, terracing, important steps taken to reduce agricultural or urban stormwater runoff, that can also reduce the downstream treatment costs for a wastewater treatment plant. So a trading mechanism, which would be regulated by the state, would allow for an entity that has responsibility and wants to accelerate restoration to purchase some credits for pollution prevention upstream that could be done by another entity that isn't required under their permit to do anything, but could become a player, a real participant in the cleanup. So
it seems hard to me, the idea of how advanced is the science in knowing how much benefit, how much improved the pollution picture would be by some activity. You use the phrase best management practices. But how do we really know whether that compensatory action that this other entity is taking, for which it has a credit that it can trade.
Yeah, how
do we know that that's really going to improve the pollution picture that much?
Well, do it not just by trusting, but by verifying. All right, trust and verify, and that is an approach we deal, how we manage regulated sources. But with trades, the key is to build a monitoring protocols through improved information. It's very exciting. How as many challenges as we seem to have in keeping the air clean and the water pure, that increasingly technology, modeling, remote sensing, You know, the Chesapeake Conservancy, for instance, is doing award-winning work on being able to target the greatest sources of pollution in a large watershed and monitoring practices. You can track that. I absolutely agree, though, that one of the keys to any innovative approach to dealing with pollution is transparency on what the rules are and follow-up monitoring and accountability. And it's accountability, Sheila, not just on whether the best management practices that were purchased are actually being installed.
Right. I figure that's less of a problem than the impact of those practices.
That's right. The impact at the edge of the field, but also downstream. And so, you know, Senator Cardin held some great hearings on this, has been supportive of trading and the monitoring and accountability. We all feel that the gains by innovating and exploring markets to supplement, not to replace, regulatory enforceable programs is going to be key. And I can tell you, you know, the federal agencies are encouraging states to develop these programs too.
When you say accountability, does that mean that if a trade is made on the exchange that Maryland would set up, a trade is made and you keep track of what this compensatory action was supposed to be and you check on it and 2 years later it turns out it's not having the impact. Meanwhile, the purchaser of that credit has been allowed to emit whatever the problem was, has not had to fully address that problem because they bought this credit. Will you go back then and undo that trade or somehow require more of the purchaser of that credit?
Right. We're committed to clean water. We're committed to meeting our aggressive goals and milestones under the Chesapeake Bay TMDL and protecting local water quality. So, yes, there has to be an enforceable program. Sometimes it's the buyer and the seller. If the seller doesn't deliver on a commitment made to the buyer is going to bring some action. But what you have from me as an environment official is both at the state level and at the local level, yes, we want to make sure trading and other innovative strategies, public-private partnerships for stormwater financing like in Prince George's County, it's becoming a national model of partnership, not to reduce responsibility or environmental progress, but to accelerate it. So, you know, it's one of the areas that our state, Governor Hogan, is saying, I really want partnerships. I want innovation. I want us to excel at our work on the Bay and in local water quality. Around the country, this is it's a trend, and it's the wave of the future. But you're right. There needs to be accountability, and we need to take steps to make sure certain trades really do work and that they don't result in unacceptable local impacts, but more positive.
Well, let me pick up on that phrase, local impacts. The first point you made was that you disagree with Ronica Bell that they're winners and losers. I'm not quite sure. And in particular, I'm not quite sure because
I think we all win when someone who's being regulated, like under a permit, can find a more cost-effective solution. The ratepayers, the taxpayers win. Environmental citizens of the watershed win when that entity can also partner with another player. Particularly, it could be a farmer who is selling a credit. The farmer is benefiting and helping the Chesapeake Bay, financially benefiting and helping clean up the bay. So they're, you know, making false choices. I think that's what makes it so exciting to develop market-based approaches like trading and public-private partnerships on stormwater management. One of the great opportunities for our state, since I can say that we have one of the most environmentally progressive and aggressive stormwater programs in the country, in the counties that have their municipal separate storm sewer system permits. They have a responsibility to green their watershed, reduce the amount of impervious surface areas in the watershed. And it's enforceable. It's very enforceable through the permit. I know that the price tag for the state in meeting those noble environmental objectives add up to about $5 billion in order to comply with our Chesapeake Bay program. The question isn't, should we get away from those important goals and requirements? The question is, how can we work together to build the partnerships and use innovative financing tools so that the counties can actually meet those goals and do it in a fair way? And that's one reason why the EPA and the other six states in the Chesapeake Bay watershed and the District of Columbia are going to have an environmental financing symposium in Maryland, the University of Maryland, in April. It's using trading and public-private partnerships, not to get around our environmental requirements, particularly with respect to the Bay, but to come up with the ways and the means to do it and in a way that keeps public support and keeps the ratepayers saying we're getting value for our investments.
And you, one last thing before we need to take a break. When you say, one of the points that Rona made was that the benefits might be quite distant from the pollution that is sparking the original trade. You've talked about the watershed. The Chesapeake watershed is a multi-state thing. So, I mean, is it the case that we may see benefits to address pollution quite distant from where that pollution is actually taking place?
Location, location, location.
That's my question.
The objective is to always have local water quality improved, and that is a fundamental principle in our nutrient trading policy that we issued in October. It's also the key question with wetlands mitigation banking. It's very important to define the service area in which you can trade. And that is going to be a very important part of the dialogue. The governor wants to make sure that we have meaningful dialogue and collaboration with all the different interests and perspectives on that to help shape the size and contour of the service area in which trades could occur. But it's very important in the water quality world to make sure that you're not going way outside of an area or a watershed. That's what can lead to concerns if it's not carefully managed, that you're transferring benefits from one watershed to another. So that's one of the key points that we're committed to working in a collaborative way with the environmental community, with public officials, with the EPA, with Department of Agriculture and the State Department of Agriculture. And making sure that we have a reasonable, balanced approach that's fair.
Okay, as I said, we need to take a break. And now Ben Grumbles, Maryland Secretary of the Environment, is with us for the hour. When we come back, we're going to talk about emissions and the proposed incinerator in Curtis Bay, and we'll take your calls. Our local number, 410-662-8780. Our toll-free long-distance number, 1-866-661-9309. And midday at WYPR.org is our email. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. With me is Ben Grumbles, Maryland Secretary of the Environment. We're taking your calls at 410-662-8780 or toll-free 1-866-661-9309. And you can always email us at midday@wypr.org. This week, two nonprofits said they intend to file suit against Energy Answers, the company with a permit to build a trash-burning incinerator on the site of a former chemical plant near Curtis Bay in South Baltimore. The two groups are the Environmental Integrity Project and United Workers. They contend that Energy Answers' permit to build the plant has expired. Yesterday, I spoke with Dr. Tim Whitehouse, who is director of the nonprofit Chesapeake Physicians for Social Responsibility, and I asked him about the incinerator issue.
You know, Secretary Grumbles has inherited a mess. This Energy Answers facility, he's inherited from his predecessors. It's a facility that's located in a poor area. It's a facility that will emit significant amounts of very toxic pollutants into the southern Baltimore area. And it was done by a Democratic administration. We don't know how this new administration will respond, but clearly they don't seem to want to make a decision. But I think Baltimore, in moving forward, needs to think about whether it wants these types of facilities within its jurisdiction. What is this going to do for the property values in southern Baltimore? These facilities require hundreds of diesel truck trips a day through neighborhoods. They emit 1,000 pounds of lead, they're permitted, into neighborhoods in that area. We know lead is a very serious neurotoxin. There's no safe level of lead. Why the state is moving forward with this project, we're just not certain. It makes no sense economically. It makes no sense from a public health point of view. And we don't need the energy from this facility.
Secretary Grumbles, do you agree that you inherited a mess?
Well, I didn't inherit anything. I am excited about the opportunities I have at the Department of the Environment to help bring together differing views and perspectives. I mean, fundamentally, this is a local land use decision. Our department is involved in it because it was our responsibility to issue the permits to ensure air quality would be maintained and protected with this energy facility that was permitted back in 2010 by the Public Service Commission. And so there are two things going on, Sheila. One is there is a legal question, and we've been reviewing this. We are taking this matter very seriously, looking at the arguments, looking at the evidence. The legal question is, has the permit expired? Has the company done enough under the terms of the permit issued over 5 years ago to meet the test of having some continuous construction involved? If not, then the conclusion would be that the permit has expired and needs to be they need to reapply for that. And so we have been sifting through the different amounts of information on that question of whether or not they have done enough, looking at how other states interpret it and how the U.S. EPA interprets it, this question of has this specific permit expired. The other very important piece of this, which is it's about local choices as to how energy is produced and what a community accepts, and taking into account the jobs, the environmental impact, the public acceptability of a project. And I hear very loud and clear that from the Energy Answers Company, they have great opportunities ahead and economic development and jobs. I hear very clearly from some very vocal and impassioned citizens and an array of different nonprofits and groups that from a policy standpoint, it was a wrong decision that was made several years ago in a previous administration, and it was approval by the Public Service Commission, and that it ought to be scrapped, so to speak.
Well,
so,
and let me just pick up on that because we're hearing from some of those people too. Greg has emailed us. The incinerator would be the largest in the nation and would import 4,000 tons of trash a day. Residents have been decrying the incinerator for years and raising up positive alternatives. Now that the New York-based company has failed to construct for over 18 months, triggering the expiration of their permit, when will state officials support residents in working to move past this failed development? And on that point, Destiny has called us from Baltimore. Destiny, welcome to Midday.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Fine. How are you? What's your comment, Destiny?
So, surrounding all of that, I'm glad you got Greg's email. I also wanted to talk about, or emphasize rather, the issue of, like, or the possible alternatives, because, I mean, we've been fighting this issue for a long time. We have been reaching out to MDE, to public officials, for 6 months about this issue. And for 6 months, there had been silence on behalf of MDE.
Well, why don't we see what Secretary Grumbles has to say on the silence question, on the 6 months, on the expiration of the permit?
Yep. Hi, Destiny. Destiny and I have been exchanging emails, and we've talked some. And, you know, this is one of those topics that, you know, on the legal side of the equation, we've sent a pretty strong signal, and I did. I wrote to the company and said, you need to demonstrate that the permit is still valid, because we have serious questions about that. And they've provided information, and we're going through that information, and we are also coordinating with other experts, legal and policy environmental regulators on precedent for that. I suspect one way or the other there's going to be a lawsuit. On the policy side of the equation, I fundamentally embrace the notion, the empowerment that citizens groups and nonprofits have about new visions, new futures, new ways, renewable energy, different exciting paths. It was honestly one of the motivating factors that I thought in working more closely with the Maryland Energy Administration when they moved to our headquarters in Montgomery Park, we can share ideas about renewables and learn more about the policies of the state on energy production. I also know that this is an impassioned topic, so local leadership is going to be very important on it. And I fundamentally recognize that their concerns. And I just want to say, in terms of air quality and the emissions requirements, my staff is absolutely taking those seriously and looking at the permit terms that was issued, and looking to see how it addresses lead or other air emissions. We know it's very important to have permits that are protective of public health and the environment. And so on this one, it's getting a lot of attention, as it should, particularly for Curtis Bay. It's an important national topic as well, though, Sheila, because there are a lot of people, and it doesn't matter what party or affiliation, there are a lot of people who embrace resource recovery, this notion of reduce, reuse, recycle, and try to turn waste into wealth. The key is to ensure that there are proper safeguards in place. And so for this controversial topic, we are reviewing the legal aspects of it, and have not taken sides, but instead have been reading and listening to the various views and perspectives, and absolutely want to engage with local officials on this as well, because it really matters. It's their neighborhoods, their city, their community.
Let me understand your use of reduce, reuse, recycle in this context.
Mm-hmm.
You said it's absolutely necessary to safeguards, but this is not reducing, reusing, or recycle. This is burning.
No, this is a fundamental, a very important component to how our state and how the nation manages waste, is to first reduce the amount of unnecessary packaging and waste, reduce the wastage, look for ways to reuse products and packages and materials. Water reuse is
right.
Fundamentally an important part. On the recycle component, resource recovery is an issue here. We're very enthused in working with the Department of Agriculture and the Maryland Energy Administration about poultry litter to energy to help reduce the problems that can occur in certain areas, particularly in the Eastern Shore. In this particular instance, it's converting trash, a waste product, into a fuel that could then be recovered and produce energy. And so it's a resource recovery matter. And I absolutely get it that there's a concern about the burning, the incineration piece of it. That's why we issue protective air permits. And so this is an important local discussion. We're involved in it because of the question about whether the permit is still valid or not. And it's an important
Destiny is still with us. I think Rick has weighed in on the phone also. Rick, welcome to Midday. Rick is gone. Okay, Rick asked you, why didn't you respond to Destiny's question?
What was the question? Which question?
Destiny, you want to restate your question?
And Destiny's gone too. Destiny basically was asking why, okay, you've been reviewing,
right.
but it's been 6 months of review. Why such a long review? Let me read also that we got an email from Amanda who says she's one of the Incinerator 7, the people who were arrested protesting at the Department of Environment in December. And she says, at that time, you promised us that MDE was working on evaluating the validity of Energy Answer's permit to construct the Fairfield. And you claim the response would be given by January. As we continued contacting your office, representatives told us the decision was forthcoming by the end of January. Why is it taking so long to conduct this review? Every day you delay this decision represents your failure to protect the residents of Curtis Bay, who already have the lowest life expectancy in the city of Baltimore, along with the highest rates of asthma and cancer.
Well, first of all, it's very important to take all of these concerns into account and make a decision. We are looking at the different legal aspects of the case because I fully expect that there could be litigation involved. And so I made a commitment to try to make a decision on my part as soon as I could. And I was hoping to do that earlier in the year. There are also, you know, with the General Assembly back in session, there are a lot of important topics, fundamentally important topics to the state and our agenda of making environmental and public health progress. And so I'm working on those as well. And it's taking some additional time to do that. In the meantime, though, Sheila, I think it's very important to make sure that voices are heard. There are other competing views, but I think it's important for environmental and citizens groups to continue to voice their concerns and provide information on alternative methods. And you know, we're listening to that. And I want to make sure that local officials also get the benefit of that added voice.
As I said, two groups have notified Energy Answers, the company that wants to build this incinerator, that they intend to file suit. Will that delay your decision on the permit? Will you stand aside and wait for the courts to make a decision?
Oh, I don't know. I would want us to talk more with the lawyers. I absolutely want to see progress made in this making this decision. It's just there are a variety of factors, and you know, I want to commend citizens for weighing in. You know, there are also different voices, proponents of the project itself, and you know, from a Governor Hogan's perspective, the key here is to listen to all sides, try to find ways for common ground and real progress on topics that are important, that bring up questions of public health and safety. We're absolutely taking this seriously and listening and hear some of the concerns. But I just, you know, there's some I would love to help ensure that the different sides are actually not just talking over one another, but are actually talking with one another. So I really hope that
that's a challenge.
It is a challenge. It is. So we get out more facts, and we want to help facilitate that.
We have to take another break here. Maryland Environment Secretary Ben Grumbles is with us for the rest of the hour. When we come back, more of your calls and emails. We have several people who want to discuss nutrient trading. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm here with Ben Grumbles, Maryland Secretary of the Environment. And we're taking your calls. 410-662-8780 is our local number. Or from anywhere, you can call us toll free at 866-661-9309 or send an email to midday@wypr.org. Tom is calling us from Baltimore, still on the incinerator issue. Tom, welcome to Midday.
Hello, my name is Tom, and I live in Mount Vernon. I used to live in Brooklyn, Curtis Bay. And as I understand it, this plant is going to be a regional plant, accepting tires, plastics, garbage from all over the East Coast. If this plant just handled Maryland garbage or Baltimore garbage, maybe the pill would be easier to swallow for the people in Curtis Bay. But I don't see why the people in Curtis Bay have to accept trash and garbage from Philadelphia or New York City and suffer that way. Thank you very much.
Tom, thanks for the comment. You want to respond to Tom?
No, I fully appreciate that concern being articulated. I mean, from my perspective, Environment Secretary, that gets to decisions about local land use, local energy, local policy, and they're important considerations, important factors, and not just scientific environmental ones, but social ones. And
factors that you can bring to bear on this decision?
Well, I mean, our responsibility with the air permit is to focus in on what air emissions. We do look at cumulative impacts. I think that is an important component of our environmental responsibility, but that can only go so far. I mean, just all I would say to Tom's comment is that's a very important concern, a very important perspective that needs to be heard.
Wayne is calling us. I'm not sure from where. Wayne, welcome to the show. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we had Wayne, but we apparently don't. Susan wants to talk about nutrient trading, I think. Susan, welcome to the show.
Hi. I've just had a little bit of a problem with my cell phone, so can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay, great. Secretary Grumbles, this is a two-part question. So my first, it's more of an observation. That's the first part, which is I see nutrient trading as being not very sustainable, and this is in the to the degree that the more businesses there are, the more permits there are, and I don't see how that's sustainable as a plan. And I guess that's what truly depresses me about this whole approach. I think it lacks vision. This is my perspective as a citizen. I think it lacks vision, and it also lacks the ultimate goal, which should be eliminating pollution. And the second part, which is, this is the question. I really don't understand why we're not rewarding, and maybe we are, maybe you could talk about it, why we're not rewarding more efforts in organic farming, more environmentally friendly industries developing in Maryland, and also the recycling industry. All of those are areas of the economy which are growing at rates unpredicted before by people who perhaps thought it wasn't possible. But would like to have you comment on those issues.
Yeah, those are great.
Susan, thank you.
Great parts, both of them. And on the first one, I would just say very strongly that land use decisions, smart growth decisions are fundamentally important to this. What trading can do, it's not a silver bullet. And believe me, it's not the ultimate the sole approach. It is a way to bring in additional players to solve some of these watershed-wide challenges and save some money if it's done in the right manner and leads to accelerating environmental restoration. And again, that's the goal. And through a collaborative process that we've embraced and that the governor believes strongly about, I think we'll come up with some safeguards and provisions that other states have used to make sure that we are making progress and that the continued goal of reducing pollution and pollution prevention in the first place, that's paramount. On the second part of the question, the state issued composting regulations. We are pressing other agencies and departments and working with communities on recycling. Sheila and I talked a little earlier in the hour about the waste management hierarchy of reduce, reuse, recycle. We firmly support that and are committed to that. With recycling, we have to work very closely with counties and the solid waste management officials in urban and rural areas to help them on the environmental education component of it, which we fully embrace, and also the economics of it. How can we reduce, in working together, some of the barriers to recycling and reuse? It's very exciting when you start thinking innovatively about how can recycled materials, recycled products be put to use. One of the greatest trends around the country and in Maryland in the last two decades is the convergence of both the green building movement and the green infrastructure movement. It helps reduce the energy costs and greenhouse gas emissions and wastage of buildings if they're not designed and operated properly. That's the green building movement. And the green infrastructure movement is a way to rely more on softer path technologies to manage stormwater, urban areas, the urban heat island effect, beautify communities. But again, just like trading, you have to make sure that these innovative natural systems approaches are going to lead to measurable environmental results. And so I think the green building movement plus the green infrastructure movement, it's a powerful synergy. It's the way of the future. And, you know, the ethic of recycling is a critical component to that, as is organic farming and the composting regulations.
Derek from Pasadena has another comment about nutrient trading. Derek, okay. Welcome to Midday.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and I'll be brief. Two things. The largest landowner in the Chesapeake Bay watershed is the Department of Defense. And so what this nutrient trading allows them to do is to slightly circumvent the restrictions that the EPA puts on, because this allows them to continue their activities. And that's partly what this is about, and also the excitement in Virginia. And secondly, because it is a market-based system, if you are low income, you have no purchase into this system. You may, you know, kind of get the results from it, but you don't actually participate in it. So really, and especially in Maryland, this is going to benefit farmers and wealthy landowners as well as businesses, but not the individual citizen who doesn't have anything on the same scale as these big businesses to trade.
Yeah, two points on those points, and I appreciate both of them.
Derek, thank you.
One is it's very important for the federal landlords and managers of properties throughout the Chesapeake Bay watershed and in the state of Maryland to fulfill their environmental responsibilities. Maryland continues to be an aggressive and supportive partner in the Chesapeake Bay TMDL, and that is a strong signal. That's a way to
leverage the total maximum daily load, which is basically the pollution diet. How much pollution can be coped with?
Nitrogen, phosphorus, and sediment, which is that's an important component. And so, continuing as a state to leverage our tools under the Chesapeake Bay TMDL and our relationship with the U.S. EPA is an important one, and I look forward to that partnership with other federal agencies, including Department of the Defense. And the other piece of it is I absolutely believe one of the reasons why I think market-based approaches, not in lieu of command and control regulations, but to supplement them, can benefit everyone, is that, as I mentioned, throughout Maryland, we know that urban areas are facing a very expensive price tag to properly control their stormwater under the state permits and state regulations for municipal separate storm sewer systems. We know that they are going to be looking for ways to do it in the most cost-effective manner that doesn't lead to outrageous rate hikes or a burden on the county budget or taxpayer. I fundamentally believe that trading in certain urban watersheds can help reduce some of those costs and increase the environmental results, the reduction in nitrogen and phosphorus. I know of some urban communities that have aggressive stormwater permits, but they're looking at are there urban areas within their community that they could partner with through a trading program to help reduce the price tag, not the environmental delivery of results, but the price tag. So I think we need to continue to take time. Obviously, there's some legitimate questions, concerns about the safeguards on trading, but I'm fundamentally committed to using it in a collaborative way, as the governor embraces the mantra of bringing together different groups, just like he did with the phosphorus management regulations in last year. bring together folks who have been in the past adversaries, and in this case with the Chesapeake Bay, sometimes it's urban and rural, sometimes it's wastewater treatment people and agricultural producers.
Derek, thank you for the call. We're almost out of time, but I want to ask Colin, calling us from Rosedale, if he can make his comment quickly. Colin?
Hi.
Hi. Are
you there?
Yeah, we hear you.
Hi. It seems to me like overall your goal, Mr. Grumble, is to, all these cost-effective measures. It doesn't sound like your primary goal is to make Maryland a more green, more habitable place, and to take care. I mean, frankly, it sounds like after the Flint water crisis, you're talking about finding ways of getting around water treatment. The residents where the incinerator is, sounds like they have the worst health problems in the state, and you're okay with
absolutely not. No, I'll tell you, the fundamental mission of our department and my job for the governor is to protect and restore the environment for the health and well-being of all Marylanders. And we absolutely are going to continue to be leaders in restoring the environment, meeting the obligations under the Chesapeake Bay pollution diet. The key for us is using additional tools to bring in more partners. Cost matters. It's not as important as public health and safety. So when you mention lead, whether it's lead paint or potential concerns about lead poisoning in water systems, that is the priority. And we're going to continue to put in place the safeguards that are needed and maintain those safeguards, but do it through teamwork and multiple layers of protection. And I think some of these ideas like nutrient trading or wetlands mitigation banking or public-private partnerships, what they're helping to do is to close the funding gap. But you're absolutely right that the primary objective, and it's one that gets me excited about working for the governor and for the state and for the Department of the Environment every day, is how do you ensure public health and safety are
we
advanced.
We're flat out of time and have to leave it there. I want to thank you, Secretary Ben Grumbles, Secretary of Maryland's Department of Environment. I also want to thank all of the listeners who called and took part in this conversation and those who emailed us. Tomorrow on midday, we'll be speaking to technology policy expert Alec Ross about where the economy is headed, industries of the future. We hope you'll join us for that. I'm Sheila Cast. Have a great afternoon. Stay tuned now for Here and Now.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.